And in 3, 2, and 1. This week in Geek.
This Week in Geek, we talk Five Nights at Freddy's, Sesame Street, and Lost Seraphim.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another week of This Week in Geek. It is November 1st today that we are recording on a Wednesday. I don't know when I'll actually get around to editing and uploading it, but it's November 1st as of right now at like 10:21 p.m. So, Halloween was yesterday. How are you, Kevin? How was your Halloween?
Oh, pretty good. I handed out some Pokemon packs. That's all I did. I wore a Snorlax onesie out in public. And people who were like, "You're Snorlax." I'm like, "Yeah, here's a pack. Have fun." They're like, "Okay." But yeah, that's what I did. I still do this. Okay, wait. Is there really a difference between right and left Twix? I know that people like debate it, but I don't know if there really is a difference.
Do you think there is?
I don't know. I have both of them sitting right in front of me. I gotta just like
it's a meme, Kevin. It's a meme.
I think it's a meme.
It's just their marketing. It's how they make funny content for commercials and get people like talking about it on social media, and they're manufacturing a fun controversy. It's not actually a thing.
Yeah, it's like the same thing, but why would you waste like so much time labeling it?
Because what else are they gonna spend their money on to advertise Twix? Like, how else are you gonna like Reese's has the wrap thing, like Skittles taste the rainbow, M&M's, they have the M&M's to advertise
it. So they just want to create a Twix civil war within themselves?
Pretty much. That's their whole shtick at this point. Until they can find some like other gimmick, that's it.
Oh, no, okay.
That's the whole thing. Like, I was very confused also when this first came out. It's like, wait, there's no difference. And then I realized that's what it is. There is no difference. That's the joke of it all. Do you have photos of you passing out the candy or just in your onesie?
No, I think I have one photo of me in my onesie. I think that's
right.
It.
Send it to me so I can actually use the social media that I have set up for us and post it.
All right.
I also helped pass out the candies. I also did pass out some Pokemon packs, although they were last year's Pokemon packs. Did you pass out the Gengar ones or the Mimikyu ones?
The Mimikyu ones. I got some really early this year, and then I just haven't been able to like give them out. So,
I held on to mine. Like, I saw them pop up in like August, so I held on to them from like August, September, and into October.
Yeah,
or something like that. I had them in my room for months, and I just was waiting. So my sister made some goodie bags to give to kids. And she put in like glow sticks and rubber duckies and glow in the dark dinosaurs and the Pokemon packs that I bought. And initially she was going to put in two packs of candy or two pieces of candy. I'm like, yo, that's already so loaded. Why are you giving them two pieces of candy? And she's like, fine, I'll put in one. But she passed those out and eventually we ran out of those. So we started passing out like pretty much anything we had in the house, like candy from last year when we trick-or-treated. This is not the first year I didn't go trick-or-treating. I didn't go trick-or-treating my senior year of college. We were supposed to go out into Westwood where they probably have a lot of really, really nice candy. But instead of going, my roommate decided, no, I'm going to go get high instead. So that threw a plans completely apart. But what was I saying? Oh, well, I did. So we like ended up passing out like the old candy or like bags of popcorn or like Slim Jims we had in like the pantry and granola bars and whatnot. But I was dressed up in this like burlap scarecrow rabbit mask, and I got these like claw fingers that are like extended, like you know how like the other mother's fingers in Coraline are like very long and like pointy and like longer than a hand should be. That's kind of what I was wearing. I'm actually wearing it right now. I was wearing a, you'll see it in the photos if you look online, when I post, but I was wearing a red flannel, and then I had a black long sleeve underneath, and I put on black gloves and the black fingers, and I had the burlap rabbit sack mask. So it's kind of like I was going for a kind of like cursed harvest scarecrow spirit, whatever thing. And this mask was really cool. I saw it last year when I was on a trip to Spirit Halloween. And I'm like, you know what? I already have a costume this year. I did my baby face killer last year again. And I'm like, I want this mask. So I'll just buy it and I won't have to buy a costume next year. So I did that. And this mask is really good because it's like, it protrudes from your head. So you can't really see my face when I'm inside it. So I kind of just stood still while my sister was handing out candy and people were like, is there a person in there? No, I don't think so. I think that's just like a display. And as they were walking by, I would like either like turn my head at them or I would like pounce at them. It was great. Uh-huh. I scared a lot of people. Scared like not even just like kids, like teens and adults were like, is that a person or is that no, I don't know. There was a couple people who were smart because one of them saw like my phone in my pocket and like the outline in my pants. It's like, oh no, that's a person. There's a phone in his pocket. I'm like, damn it. There's another group that's like, oh no, he's wearing shoes. What kind of animatronic was be wearing like sneakers, bro? Because I was wearing my Adidas because I didn't have any like thematic shoes to wear or like bunny feet or whatever. So that's what I did. I scared folks. And then we opened up one, like we split up. I bought one of the Gengar packs and one of the Mimikyu packs. So me and my family just like split those up and opened a few, and there were just so many repeats, but it was fun to do that again. And then I watched some horror movie. Well, I watched a horror movie. I watched Hell House LLC, which is one of those found footage movies, but I actually really liked this one. I heard a lot about it, so I was expecting a lot, and it's not the scariest, like it's not going to give me nightmares, but it was like sufficiently creepy and a lot of fun. It was on Amazon Prime Video. So if you have it and get a chance to watch it, it's a lot of fun. It's pretty much this group of this group who like puts on haunted houses every year, like buys up this abandoned hotel and tries to turn it into a haunted house because that's their entire job. That's their entire company. And they've done it before in other cities and were pretty successful. But something's wrong with this hotel and weird things happen. So the whole footage, the whole movie is essentially a pseudo documentary mixed with like fake experts talking about it. And then this found footage that they have, a lot of fun. And then I also of course watched the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, which is have to every year. And yeah, that was my Halloween. Have you watched any spooky movies this year, Kevin? I know you're not into the horror all that much.
Yeah, I don't do spooky Halloween stuff, but yeah, I think what did I do? I just watched a friend play a little bit of like Resident Evil, a little bit here and there, but which nothing one? Too crazy. 4.
Okay, that's one I haven't played. That's the one everyone loves. Yeah. I still say to this day, Biohazard, which is Resident Evil 7, is still one of the creepiest games I've ever played. It's like,
yeah,
the first 2 hours are absolutely terrifying. And it was great because that was like the reboot of the Resident Evil series where they changed it to first person. It's so good.
Yeah,
I knew it was fake. Like you very clearly know it's not real, and it's just gonna be jump scare after jump scare. But it's so effective, the immersion that they create with it. Like play it with headphones if you haven't played it yet. It's amazing. So this year, like I was really lacking in my horror watching. I think the only ones that I watched really are, Invisible Man, the original one from the 19 whatevers, Creature from the Black Lagoon. I was in a Halloween themed play, so that kind of, I guess, counts for something. What else did I watch? I watched The Exorcist 2, which was god awful garbage. It was just cash grab nonsense. I watched The New Exorcist, which Exorcist Believer, it's a reboot of the series. It's supposed to kick off another trilogy, which is like, it was fine. It was atmospheric. It was creepy enough. It wasn't like nightmare inducing scary like the very original Exorcist was. It wasn't like groundbreaking or anything. At most, as my friend Terrence put it, it feels like it's a it's trying to set up a religious ghost hunting Avengers. Like if you see it, or if you have seen it, you'll understand what I mean by that by the end. And then I watched Five Nights at Freddy's. Have you seen it, or have you any interest in seeing it, Kevin?
I have no interest in seeing it, but my sister saw it and she gave me her review of it. But I don't.
What was
I don't think I'm gonna go see it. She was like, it's not.
Wait, do you don't want to see it because of the spooky factor, or you just don't care about Five Nights at Freddy's?
I just don't care enough.
Okay.
So I probably won't.
Have you ever
see
played
it.
Five Nights?
Yes, and I shit myself.
Okay, just keep going. I'm interrupting. I don't mean.
No. Like she was like, yeah, it's not the same as the games. She's like, I'm more afraid of the games than I am of this movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, they had to dumb it down for like making it whatever rating it is, like without like truly like spooking everybody, but he's like, there are moments where like I remember you look at Foxy for like 2 seconds and then you just start seeing him sprint down the hall. That scares me, right? But like,
yeah.
My sister's like, yeah, you would get a shot of Foxy for half a second, you're like, like it's gonna start running, and then it doesn't do much. So you're just like, okay. But yeah, I just think I think it's for the hype, which makes sense, but like a lot of people, like, it doesn't have the same like connection one-to-one of all the jump scares that you get from the original Five Nights.
I think Five Nights, like the game Five Nights, is one of the most like effective uses of jump scare that I've ever seen. That's enjoyable. Like, I think jump scares are so lazy at this point. Like, I think James Wan is become a very incredibly lazy filmmaker that can, in my opinion, barely do a jump scare properly. He started out really strong with like atmospheric horror, and like with the Conjuring, the original one, like it was inventive, it was creepy, and now it's just kind of like jump scare this, jump scare that. And James Wan didn't do this one, but I'm just referencing jump scares. But like, I think the original Five Nights at Freddy's, like, you have to remember, I don't think it was made for kids.
It was not.
Yeah, so that's why it was so scary. And I've only played it once, and it was at a game night, a Halloween game night for my floor in sophomore year of college. So like, we were all adults in there like shitting ourselves because it was so creepy. I did not last all five nights because
yeah,
it's hard to do that. But it just also I feel like over time, as we've become accustomed to Five Nights at Freddy's, I feel like it's kind of got the same effect as like the Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared videos, where the first one was just so out of left field and so eerie and so creepy that it really took off. And as we as a public kind of got more used to it, the weirdness, the horror, like the design of everything kind of just became as we expect. Like, the original jump scares from FNAF are just, they look really creepy. Like the design of the robots when they're like screaming in your face is unsettling. And now it's just like Freddy Fazbear is kind of cutesy. And I feel like that's the disconnect between, besides, I would absolutely 100% agree with your sister that it doesn't connect to the gameplay. I really wanted at least one or two scenes of capturing that gameplay experience. And we do get nods to it with, like, of course you get the monitors of the screens and like the vents and whatever, but we never get that like feeling that we're playing the game. I feel like the movie overall just bogs itself too down with Josh Hutcherson's story. And like, I don't care about why I should feel sorry for you. I want to see like creepy robots doing creepy things and like murderous Chuck E. Cheese. That's what I came here to see. We didn't really get that. I would still say it's a fun movie. Just to see the animatronics and just kind of feel that nostalgia for Chuck E. Cheese and the immersive environment. And Matthew Lillard is great as always. When you have Matthew Lillard in a movie, you know it's going to be at least a fun time, if not a good time. But I, in general, I think it was enjoyable. It's probably the better horror movie that I've seen this year that was new. Like I've seen this, I've seen The Nun, I've seen the Last Voyage of the Demeter was good, but not really scary or that effective because they tipped the monster off way too early. But I would say like if I had to watch any horror movie again that I've seen this year, it would be FNAF. So that's also like it was I feel like I might have gotten more out of it had I seen it in a theater because I saw it at my because it's available on Peacock too at the same time that it's available in theaters. So I went over to my friend Terrence's house and like we carved pumpkins with his kids and we watched the movie. So I feel like had I gone to a theater and had that like more immersive experience, I feel like it would have I would have enjoyed the experience even more. But I also like not having to pay for it, even though I already have like the movie pass or whatever. But I don't know. I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it a lot more than what else I've seen. So it was good. Which leads us into our first story. And the kind I don't know how much stock to take in this, but according to an interview with Entertainment Weekly, the director of the movie, Emma Tammy, said that while they were making the film, the animatronic props would kind of move on seemingly on their own and feel like they were kind of alive. According to her quote, and I'll just read it first and explain it afterwards. They did have a life of their own at times, she says. Each of the different moving parts on the animatronic was puppeteered by a different person. You had the eyes controlled by someone, the arms controlled by someone else, the ears and jaws controlled by a different puppeteer. I remember standing next to one of the puppeteers with a remote control in their hand, and the animatronic all of a sudden twitched its eye. I looked at the puppeteer and was like, "Did you do that?" And she said, "No. It just needed to let us know it was alive. I kid, but they are imperfect and wonderfully so. And definitely we embraced the quirks and they would do stuff that we didn't necessarily command them to exactly. We sometimes thought it was gold and used it. So it was super fun in that way, like a real live element." I that kind of gives it away. It's probably just like another puppeteer accidentally like twitching the controls. So they're not really like moving on their own. Someone's probably just moving it that they're not expecting to move it or maybe a quirk of the electrics. But I think it's funny because if you look at another film that was like famous for its animatronics, Jurassic Park, like according to some production stories, the T-Rex would move on its own. Just some wiring or whatever, like the electricals inside of it would like malfunction and the thing would move on its own, which would scare the entire cast. So they're not alive, but just the weirdness of making an animatronic is so fun to read about. So it gives a little bit of credence to like the whole concept of Five Nights at Freddy's. If like they're not obviously not gonna go around on a murder spree or like wander around this Chuck E. Cheese on their own, but like it's fun. Also, another thing I realized about Five Nights at Freddy's is I feel like it's not as scary because we know what the monsters are supposed to look like at this point. We know how they operate. We know what to expect from it because it was based on a game. And the characters are so like ingrained in pop culture at this point that there's no like shock factor to seeing them. We know what they do. We know how they look like. So, yeah. I also watched Willy's Wonderland too. I just remembered, which is
Yes.
like the Nicolas Cage version of it,
Oh,
which is
yeah, I wanted to ask you about
bonkers.
that. Do you like Willy's Wonderland or Five Nights at Freddy's more? 'Cause they have the same vibe. It's just like, I
I
know they're different,
think,
like completely, but.
yeah, I think I like the performances in Five Nights at Freddy's better of like Matthew Lillard mainly. I think that Willy's Wonderland was a better viewing experience just because it's so off the wall bonkers and a lot more fun and violent. And allegedly, like, it came out the same year, I think, as the first Five Nights at Freddy's game, or like that's when it was like concepted. Hold on. When was did Willy's Wonderland come out? Let me check. Willy's. Oh, it was a 2021 movie.
Yeah, I
So
thought it was more recent than
yeah,
Five Nights.
it was, but allegedly I've read that the filmmaker said that they started writing the movie like before Five Nights at Freddy's ever came out, and it just took them a while to make it. And of course, it, like, you have to write, rewrite, sell the script to a studio, have it produced, have it made. So it took a while. But allegedly, like, the concept was their own, which is a little hard to believe. But coincidences like that happen, like a bunch of like movies of the same type coming out all at the same time. It's happened before, so it's not completely unbelievable. But yeah, that's my Five Nights at Freddy's talk. Do you it's just do you think Five Nights at Freddy's, like, because I think it really, that and the Slender Man game, I will say, kickstarted a lot of like the streamer horror culture, where it's just like streamers reacting to these horror games that are like put out like a dime a dozen. Like, I remember Phasmophobia, I think, was the most recent one that people were crazy over. Do you think that was a good impact on gaming culture and or streamer culture, or do you feel like it's a detriment to the to everything?
I feel like it really did kickstart a lot of things. I mean, you have to consider that, like, even the joke that I've seen on like TikTok is like there's something missing from the Five Nights at Freddy's movie, and it's people printing like a small picture of Markiplier and like just putting it in the corner.
Yeah, that's exactly who I
They're
was
like,
thinking of.
this is what I feel like that now it's perfect. So there, I'm saying like I feel like it did kickstart a lot of the culture of playing horror games for streaming purposes, because everybody wants to see like a streamer like absolutely lose their stuff, but I do think that that is part of the appeal, and I do think that it really blew up with Five Nights, but as we continue on and we keep playing more horror games, it's become this like topic of oh streamers will eventually gravitate towards that, and that's it's for good content, and especially during October it's like one of the more popular like categories to stream, like horror games, Phasmophobia on occasion too, but just depends on like what exactly the streamer provides, and how fun it is,
But at what point is it just like performative screaming? Like, they're not actually scared. They're just playing the game and pretending to act like they've lost their shit just because it's what the audience expects.
Yeah, I mean that is a part of the clickbaity aspect of it, but I don't know if it's enough to like you could scream
To
and clickbait all you
discount the
want,
genre.
yeah, but it doesn't like help them out at all. Like being fake during your gameplay like won't get you enough clicks or get you enough like people to follow it. So that's
Okay.
how I see it.
So it still needs that air of authenticity.
Yes.
Okay. I feel that. So moving on to, did you think you were getting away from lists, Kevin? No.
No, I think we got another one.
We have one more that's Halloween themed or spooky themed for this month. So I don't know if after this month Facebook's going to keep serving these things to me via algorithm. But our final spooky list, even though it's after Halloween, still spooky season in my heart. This list is the top seven most traumatizing villains in kids' movies that still haunt us.
Okay.
That's very specific.
Very okay. Kids movies,
Yes.
horror, spooky. Wait, it just says traumatized. Most traumatizing spooky. Villains in kids' movies.
Yeah, traumatizing, okay. Spooky, or just...
Got it.
Otherwise unsettling to the child mind.
Okay. And you said this list is of seven?
Seven.
Seven, so. Okay. I'm gonna just put three. I think that's
okay.
Fair.
Top three. Top three is fine.
Large Marge from Pee-wee Herman's Adventure, Great Adventure. That
everyone mentions Large Marge.
Large Marge.
About like Nightmare Fuel. Everyone mentions 100%.
Large Marge. 100%. From like kids' movies that traumatize me. Oh. What's his name? The bad guy at the end of Roger Rabbit.
Judge Doom?
Judge Doom. He belongs in that list too. Like that, I don't know, that scared the shit out of me as a kid.
Yeah.
So I will give Judge Doom a pass on that one. Scary villains.
Okay, so we've like, got two. Large Marge and Judge Doom.
Yeah, Large Marge, Judge Doom. There's gotta be one more, like I feel like Courage the Cowardly Dog didn't have a movie, but that's traumatizing villains for
yeah,
sure.
Obviously. Like I was scared shitless of Ramses the Third.
Return the slab
or Suffer My Curse. Oh, like, God, that was nightmare fueled me. That's like one of the few episodes that I couldn't watch. And looking back on it now, it's not as scary, but it's still really creepy.
It's spooky. It's definitely a creepy one.
I think part of it was also the uncanny valley aspect of like the very primitive CGI on
like
it.
Early CG, yeah.
I think that's also what made it so eerie.
Yeah.
But of course, like Courage
the
is
inner
obviously...
cuts. Yeah, they would just throw those at you at random moments. You'll be like,
so
oh, what am I
unhinged.
Watching?
It was such a good show.
Yeah.
I gave my brother the DVD collection of the entire series for Christmas one year. It's fantastic.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We still need one more movie villain, though.
One more traumatizing movie villain. I'm trying to think of like what else as a kid I like was actually like deeply afraid of.
I'm gonna say this one because it's not on the list and it's not technically a horror movie villain, but just as a kid watching Lord of the Rings and seeing Sméagol really always freaked me out.
Yeah,
I was just, it was so eerie. And it took me a couple years before I could like actually go and watch Lord of the Rings. I like read the books because like the first one, there's no Sméagol in it really, so I wasn't scared. But I read the books and then I watched the movies and like eventually I got like over Sméagol. It's like, oh, I can watch this now. He's not that scary. But that's the one that like, ugh, got me as a kid.
Yeah, I really don't know who else I could put in this list. I'm drawing a blank, but. Yeah, I think Large Marge and Judge Doom are definitely on this list.
Who do you think is higher on the list then of your two?
Large Marge for sure.
Okay.
Like anybody who has seen the Pee-wee Herman movie and has seen that
by Tim Burton, so you know it's creepy.
You know it's got that spice. So I'm gonna put that in there.
All right. One also that I know people talk about a lot is people were really scared of either the witch from Wizard of Oz, the Wicked Witch, or the flying monkeys.
My mom is afraid of the flying monkeys.
Okay, see there. There's validation right there. So here's the list. Number seven, Judge Doom from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So off to a good start.
We got one.
Yeah, that final scene. Well, I mean, he's obviously like very chilling and creepy throughout the movie, but like when you see him like melt or like go toon and the weird red eyes, that's just for a child. It's like how did you get that approved for children?
Yeah,
how did you get a lot of that movie approved for children? Like not even speaking of creepiness, but just Jessica Rabbit, like yo way to awaken some things in some children.
And that's why we're funny.
So that's why I like redheads. No, that'd be Little Mermaid and Batgirl. I can absolutely identify where that came from. Oh, the first girl I dated was a redhead, so yay. She abandoned me when I got sick, so.
Rip.
Goddamn bronchitis. Anyway, moving on. Number six is the other mother from Coraline, which, yes,
Okay.
the button eyes and the spider version of the beldam. Yeah. Number five, I haven't seen this movie, so I can't comment, but The Wheelers from Return to Oz.
Nope.
I don't know what that's about. Okay, IGN. Keep going with that. Numbers four is Tarok from Ewoks, The Battle for Endor. I don't know this. Some 80s stuff. Apparently, I'm not really up to my 80s knowledge. So now, number three, Hexus from Ferngully, The Last Rainforest. I haven't seen Ferngully since I was a child. I remember nothing about it. All I know is that, like, Robin Williams is in it, Tim Curry is in it as a villain, and it's about, like, saving nature. That's all I remember.
Okay.
But yeah, this villain was played by Tim Curry, so, you know, he's got some quality acting there. Number two is The Horned King from The Black Cauldron, which I know this is like a very underrated Disney movie. I have never seen it.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Okay, all I know is that it's like, it's infamous as like the darkest movie that Disney really has ever made. And that's why a lot of people haven't seen it, because Disney kind of hushed it up a little bit. And also, like, it did really, really poorly with the box office. So, and the number one villain from a child's movie is Willy Wonka from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the Gene Wilder version, not the Johnny Depp version, which I didn't hate, but obviously the Gene Wilder version is superior. But
yeah, I mean, your imagination is still probably one of the best like songs from a movie, but it's like, yeah, I guess I understand that. It's like good music, lure them in. Ooh, Nightmare Tunnel.
Oh yeah, that's absolutely it. It's the Nightmare Tunnel where he's just screaming.
His
poem.
That had no business being there.
What is this? And also, like, there's no way these children are not dying.
Yeah.
There's no way he's not killing these children or putting them into the candy. Come on. So, I don't know if I would have put him as my top, but I can see the argument there.
Yeah.
I can absolutely see the argument there. Because, again, to this day, a lot of people I will talk to just about, like, movies or in general or, like, actors or whatever, but they will cite like that one tunnel scene in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is like, yep, that's the moment that scarred me as a child. That's where my trauma comes from. So that's the last list of spookiness for the month, at least. So moving on to some like gaming topics for me. Kevin, what do you think about mods in games?
I think they're okay as long as they're harmless. Like,
define harmless.
Like, like for the most part, I do think that mods are okay to, for like your own personal gameplay. I think that is totally fine. Like you can mod whatever you want, and because you already paid for the game, you're having fun with it. You can choose to mess it up if you want.
So like adding in trains into Skyrim instead of dragons, like Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, like that's all fun. Like you're out here having fun with your own game. You paid for it.
Yeah.
And
or like nude mods on pretty much any game that features a female character.
Yeah, like that's for you. Like you do that. I just think as long as they don't like, as long as a mod isn't like making a multiplayer experience terrible or
right,
like ruining the fun for other people, I think it's fine for whoever happens to use it.
Also, one of the reasons why I mentioned the nude mods, because like this kind of goes in with the story, but like apparently there is a Street Fighter 6 tournament that happened in August.
Where, oh yeah,
yeah. So you know about this, Kevin? But
I know about the incident. Yeah,
there was a tournament where the guy, like the tournament host, apparently had the nude Chun-Li mod in the game and didn't disable it. So they, as they were broadcasting, it's just naked Chun-Li bouncing around. So that was a very NSFW moment, which leads into the discussion of mods. So Capcom is not a fan of mods. They, I don't know if they're taking any official action against them right now, but in a, I think this was today or yesterday, Capcom's developers released a what was it, like a lecture or a discussion, or they had this discussion about their state of Capcom, and they said that mods are not favorable to them. They said that they pretty much view any modification as cheating. They said that they're going to, so this is, I guess, the action. They're going to start focusing on anti-cheat and anti-piracy measures in PC games. But what they said was, they're looking at any modification to a game as a cheat. All mods are defined as cheats, except when they are officially supported. Part of their issue is that it can damage the gameplay experience. It takes away resources when people are having to like call in the support line and have people fix that. It takes time away from developers having to figure out how the mods will affect their game, et cetera, et cetera. Another thing is that they're saying that in spite of PC being an essential part of gaming, it's hard to distinguish what's a cheat and what's a mod from a software perspective. Plus, it's like, they're also saying that like there are a number of mods, and this is, I think, the worst part of it, is that they're kind of policing culture here. But again, Japanese culture is different from Western culture. There are a number of mods that are offensive to public order and morals. When these are disseminated, the image of the product is tarnished and branding is affected. So, I mean, obviously, like, they're talking about the naked mods and stuff here. But obviously Capcom is not going to be putting out an official naked Chun-Li to put in your game. I feel like this is kind of just an excuse, and they're covering their bases, and they just don't like it. But I don't feel like anyone is actively like, oh, Street Fighter is not family friendly because some people modded in a naked Chun-Li. Capcom, dude, how dare you put this out there? It's not Capcom. It's clearly just some horny dudes on the internet.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about this, Kevin? Like, I understand from a quality perspective, like, you can't tell how it's going to affect the game. It might like break the game and people will be upset, or like for a bugs and patching thing, especially for like multiplayer games, how it, I can appreciate how it's hard for developers in the software to tell what's a cheat and what's just a fun mod. But I absolutely disagree. And again, this may be just the Western liberal crazy culture as opposed to like more conservative societies like Japan, which like they blur all their porn. I don't feel like it's Capcom's place to regulate the culture and content like that.
Overall, I think that like that was a mishap on the tournament organizer side. just take that off. That you don't need to do that. I know that it was a fumble.
It's like not changing your desktop background when you have a presentation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like it's preventable. Yeah.
Sharing your screen.
Like, it's preventable. I just don't think that like Capcom needs to crack down on it this bad, but just like just be like, hey, this is no good. Don't do this. And then just leave it at that. Be like, if you really need to be like, oh, this will not be tolerated, so on and so forth, go for it. But I just think that he fumbled, and like, yeah, they'll fix it in the future. I don't think that there's anything else that is like, I don't think you should punish all mods because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And especially coming from Capcom, I mean, this is just me like saying, yo, like even your own skin set that you give characters in previous Street Fighters, like that's a little, like, I understand like nude mod is bad unless you're like doing it for your own gameplay. But like, there's a reason why Disney could not play your Street Fighter tournament when that one player picked Miki or picked Mika, right? She it's too short of a skirt. Her entire attack moveset comes from her ass, and you can't do anything else. So like,
plus also all the jiggle physics.
Yeah,
I don't think Disney's ever in. Animated jiggle ever.
Yeah, you put that in there, buddy. Like,
that's on you.
Yeah, that's not us. That's on you.
You know the internet is a horny place. Rule 34 exists for a reason.
Exactly.
I just on that topic, Kevin. Just as a fellow creative, and I've heard different like takes on this before from other folks, but like I'm curious just that while we're talking about it, I don't know if I've ever asked you this before, but if you were ever to create a character, and one day you're just like scrolling on the internet, and just completely organically you find some rule 34 of that character, how would you feel?
I feel like it depends on, obviously, like, I feel like the biggest one is the age of the character.
As long as they're, as long as they're of legal and acceptable social age, like, as long as they're 18, like, the character
is... Yeah, like, if I put that out there, and that is their character trait, like, yeah, go for it. Like, that's cool. Like, I can't control what horny internet wants, so... I just gotta accept it and be like, damn, be like, they like my character enough to be horny about it. So I'll give you, you get a pass.
All right. Speaking of character designs, Kevin, have you heard anything about, or have you seen the new quote redesigned Garfield that's for the upcoming movie?
No.
The one that's voiced by Chris Pratt.
No.
Right, click the link real quick and just take a look at it. It's not that different.
Yeah, it's not that different.
But still something feels very wrong to me, and I figured out what it was.
Mm.
Like, does it feel wrong at all to you?
It feels a little too fuzzy.
Okay.
Okay. And possibly it could also be that like the darker patches on the fur aren't as deep.
Okay.
But I feel like those are the only two real big ones.
For me, it's that the eyes don't have like the thick black like lines to like differentiate where one eyelid kind of ends and where like the eyelids end and his fur starts. That's it for me. It's because in the new, because for the Garfield movie, they posted a post on the 29th for National Cat Day, and like just looking at it, if you look at Garfield, you know, like it's drawn out, so there's the clear, and it's drawn out as a comic strip, so there's the clear black lines delineating everything. They removed the black lines for the eyelids, and just that's the one thing that I don't like. It's a very small tweak, but it's a significant tweak for me. What's bothering me more is that he's being voiced by Chris Pratt.
But... You mean Mario? No way.
God, stop putting Chris Pratt in everything. It's like how they put Jennifer Lawrence in everything, and then she just got old, and they put Awkwafina in everything, and it just got old. Now it's Chris Pratt, and it's been old.
Yeah.
Speaking of redesigns, Sesame Street is set to update its format of its shows in 2025 for its 56th season. Previously up to this point, Sesame Street has kind of just besides like the main theme of each episode. If you've ever watched an episode of Sesame Street, you'll know that it centers around kind of informal short snippets or short segments featuring the characters. It feels kind of disjointed at times, but it's quick flashes of segments that have to do with either the letter of the day or the theme that they're teaching or the number of the day or whatever. Mm-hmm. But what they're going to be doing starting in 2025 is they're going to be adding in a longer form animated segment towards the middle of each of the episodes. They're trying to introduce kind of a longer narrative thread, which they hope will appeal to young audiences. Sesame Workshop CEO Steve Young would said, "We feel that like this was a moment to step back and think bigger about how we evolve it." The segments are going to be called Tales from 123, as referencing 123 Sesame Street is the location of where everything in Sesame Street takes place. I think this is very interesting considering how, one, it is targeted towards younger audiences because it's Sesame Street, but also with how prevalent short form media is now and how like people are really not willing, even adults like are not willing to sit through longer form content. This is equally prevalent with kids because their brains are forming and being exposed to like short form content through TikTok, through YouTube, through Instagram or whatever, with like the reels and like the 90-second limit or whatever. Like TikTok, it's increased, but just with the way things are going and the emphasis on short form video, it's interesting to see the emphasis on hoping that kids will take to longer form content. I don't know if it'll work. I hope it does, because like it's been demonstrably proven that with how modern film relies more on quick cuts, jump cuts, and doesn't let its scenes sit out longer, audiences have grown to have a much shorter attention span, which they can't focus if scenes are too long. So I wonder if this will be effective. I think it's a noble goal. I just don't know if with how much short form content there is now and how much society and social media and creators are pushing it, I feel like they might be fighting a losing battle here, which it sucks because I think Sesame Street is great. And I think what they're doing, they're trying to do is great.
Yeah, I do agree. I feel like this is going to be a really tough ask. Adding a long form like piece in the middle, I feel like is going to be something that takes them a minute, you know. The best way how I could describe it is like as a film major, there was this one experiment that I remember talking about when looking at editing and pacing, right? When you look at the way how certain things are cut, obviously, like the longer certain shots take, the more there's like a sweet spot between like it taking too long and feeling like awkward, and then being too quick and then like not being able to absorb the information. Right. They did a thing where if you look at an average paced like piece of like information, the edits are like at a normal tempo, but then they made me watch an episode of Cocomelon and the cuts in Cocomelon are like a second or like maybe even a second and a half long. So it's rapid fire cutting and my slow brain is like, yo, what is going on? Every like not even like 2 or 3 seconds, like it lets my brain absorb what's going on. It's just like, here's a picture, move. What? Here's another one, move, right? And my brain is like too slow to figure that out. I feel like if you're trying to go from a kid show like that, where you're literally jamming pictures and jamming cuts into like a kid's head, and then explaining to them like, hey, you have to sit down and like absorb this now possibly like 7-8 minute clip, right? It's definitely going to throw off the pacing. I know that obviously you could cut between it, but like I feel like it's really tough to hold attention now. And with something, especially like going back to how fast TikTok has to edit and versus like how YouTube editing works and so on and so forth, like the attention span of the average viewer is like getting to literally like dumb goldfish level. Like
it's like no wonder that like kids have ADHD and increasing instances now. It's like look at what you're feeding them with Cocomelon.
Yeah, like
they're
we
not
just
allowed
gotta
to focus. They're not allowed to have like just moments of uninterrupted attention.
Yeah, like I feel like that is also another piece that in like kids these days are not allowed to be bored because there's something going on. There's always something going on. That they never have time to like sit and reflect and like think about everything else that's going on. Rather than just being jammed with info. But I feel like that's the same thing that might happen with the Sesame Street format. Obviously, they're gonna test it, and if it doesn't, like if people are like just zoning out during that middle section and not quite getting the information, they might go back to an older format. But I do think that like I don't know if the central idea thing is gonna hold it together the entire time. So we'll see.
I mean, if this works and Sesame Street is successful, hopefully other shows will kind of try to imitate them, and we'll see a much more prevalent return to longer form stuff and not just like what's newest, flashiest, and what can like throw as many ideas at you as quickly as possible. So best of luck to Sesame Street. I hope you succeed. I think there's so much stacked against you. But I mean, Sesame Street's always been a trailblazer, I think, in kids' media. So if anyone can do it, it's goddamn Sesame Street. And
Yeah, they'll figure it out for sure.
then just the last quick thing that I wanted to point out, it's not terribly big or important, but Sears, the department stores of like Sears and Roebuck and like historical Sears catalog, big department store fame is trying to come back. They're reopening some stores. They're only, I think they're what, fewer than 25 brick and mortar, at least in California, stores remaining. I think worldwide, maybe. There are less than a dozen left just around the world. I don't know. I don't know the specific numbers per se. I'm just reading what's on the website and the news report that I'm looking at. But they opened a Sears in Burbank, California, which is close to where I am, and I think it was just a soft opening. I hope it was just a soft opening. But people were saying it was sad, and that there was like they had some selection, and they had a decent selection, but like there was so much of the store space that was still empty. I personally never was a fan of Sears in particular. I did like going to department stores. I think for whatever reason, I like going to Macy's bet more than like JCPenney or Sears. I feel like JCPenney is also very overpriced and their selection's not that great. Sears always felt kind of weird to me. Like it felt so very sterile. Like you're like it's the hospital of it has that hospital like waiting room vibe to me. I don't know what it was about Sears. But
It was too white,
yeah, I think that was
like,
it.
and there was like the fluorescent lighting. I feel like that's like the 1-2 combo of like, oh man, should I be wearing gloves? Should I have like washed my hands before entering this place? Like, yeah, it's that kind of vibe.
I don't know. So, I mean, I plan on checking this place out just because I personally like shopping in store in person. I liked going to department stores, not specifically Sears, but I feel like part of me wants to go just to like show support. I don't know if I'll buy anything. But it's so weird that in an era where like malls and like retail stores are like closing very rapidly, which I don't like. It sucks. I like going to in-store stores, that they're trying to bring it back now. I don't know if it'll be successful, especially with how the media is reporting people are reacting to this soft opening, quote unquote soft opening, maybe. But if they can be successful, again, good for them. Kind of like with Sesame Street. If you can do it, good for you. But I don't know if you really can. It's just with everything that's going on in the world, I feel like the world is not wanting to go back to Sears, even if Sears wants to try to scratch and claw its way back from the brink.
Yeah, I don't know. That is the thing that I agree with getting stores back and having people go out and obviously like get their stuff, but it's tough to compete with like literally like we were shut down for 2 years, you know, 2020 to like 2022, right? Like the whole pandemic thing forced everybody to learn how to use Amazon and how to use online platformers, right? So being able, especially with like, I feel like the younger kids, obviously they don't like,
The
especially the high
youths.
school, the youths, right? Like it used to be a place where like you would be like, okay, well, if I want to go and look for something, I would go to the mall and
Yeah,
I know what store I go to.
let's
And
hang out at
then,
the mall after school.
yeah, exactly. You go there, you order like a pretzel and you just like walk around and you think about what shops you want to go in, right? Like that's how it works. I
That
just
was how
don't
we hung
know.
out in
That
the
is how we hung out,
2010s.
right? Like it's sad that like the current state of malls is like it's shutting down, but I feel like once again, like one, you
Yeah.
could always put in new stores and like find stuff that appeals to
I
us
feel like you have what you have
youth.
to do if you like if you see like some of the big malls in LA that are still like working, like the Grove or the Century City Mall. What it is it's like a spectacle. It offers something that you can't get online, which is like
A
the
movie theater
Instagrammable moments, the
or
movie theater, like the trendy shops that like
yeah.
are more bespoke and individual that aren't selling what you can get online. I think that's what you have to do to make a mall work is you have to be experiential. You have to do something that you're not getting online. Like any of these like random like Hot Topic products is like, I mean, I love Hot Topic going in there and just gawking at everything and all like just the transition from like the scary store at the mall to like the Hot Topic.
Yeah.
It's so funny to me. But like you can get Hot Topic stuff online. What you can't get is like the indie retailer who's got like similar styles, but it's like they're the smaller shop that you won't find as big of a footprint online that you have to go in store, otherwise you wouldn't know about it. That kind of stuff, or like events, like screenings, or like live music, or things like that. That's how I think you bring people out. And it's so weird to me that like, well, not weird, but like kind of funny to me that during pandemic, everyone was like so itching to, or like claimed, especially like people who were anti-mask and stuff, like claimed to be so ready to go like shop in store. But like now that we can do it again, no one does. It's back to Amazon. It's funny to me how they were like, I want to go shop in store. Where are you now? The stores need your help.
Exactly. I do agree that it was funny that, you know, Hot Topic was goth topic for the longest time, and like it was just a bunch of like dark stuff. You go in there, there's like piercing and just metal music
Yeah.
playing all the time, and now you walk into the front door and it's all this weeb shit because we took over.
It's Weeb shit, Nightmare Before Christmas, and Invader Zim, and Harry Potter.
Yeah,
Those are like the
like
four things you'll find.
in the front half of like a Hot Topic. It's just all the hilarious weeb stuff now. So that, my bad for growing up and now influencing the market, but that's how it is. I do think that like I agree. I feel like there needs to be more things experience wise that make malls attractive enough for people to go. But also like the certain shops are always like good, but I don't think people are going to the mall to do, like, I understand holiday shopping and stuff like that, but there are just like moments where I'm like walking past like a boutique, like really high-end expensive shop in a mall, and I'm like, I'm at the mall. I don't think I could be like going to
Right.
Louis Vuitton right now. Like, I'm broke. I'm here because I'm here to look at Uniqlo. I cannot afford to go into Gucci right now. So like, it's things like that. But also, I feel like there needs to be more experiences at malls. Like the movie theater is okay. I feel like that's a good one. I feel like there needs to be, this is me coming back from Japan bias, but arcades. I feel like arcades are great, especially if
Yeah.
they're well maintained and bring you something that other places can't. And just like overall, like shops that are unique to that place. I know that next time that I'm down in LA, I do want to go check out the Animate. I forgot where that is in LA, but
I've never heard of it, so I can't help you there.
okay, so Animate is one of the shops that was in Japan. It is the biggest anime merchandise retailer in Japan. and they opened their first US branch somewhere in LA. So I got to go and figure out where that is and then go there. So yeah. But yeah, that's what I think. I think malls just need to adapt to bringing experiences. And if they do that, we'll all be in a good spot.
Just the one thing to close it out. I think the main reason why it's important to have the experiential stuff and bring people physically there is because of like the impulse purchases too. Like every single time I'll go into like a mall, like even like just random store, like the impulse purchase, like something I didn't know I was looking for, or didn't know I wanted till I saw it. Like that's how you, I feel like that's a good way to get people to buy things. Is like they're walking around there anyway, they'll see something that they wouldn't have seen if they hadn't been to the mall. And then if it's that gut instinct of, oh, this is cool, I want it, and they'll buy it. Like, come on, guys. Just put us in charge of shit. Me and Kevin will run things. It'll be great.
Yeah,
I can fix it.
Yeah, we'll hit it with a hammer, and then it'll be all good.
All right, Kevin, take it away.
Okay, cool. I'm gonna start with something that I've been scrolling through off on the side to start. Before we even get into any of the stuff that I've written down, first things first. Pokemon, the Pokemon Center, the Pokemon Shop online, has a holiday collection out. So if you guys are looking to get like stockings or gloves or ugly sweaters, they are all available on the Pokemon Shop. Go ahead and check them out. I've been scrolling through a couple of them here and there. They have Pokemon ugly sweaters, so if you are a fan of those, go ahead and pick them up. Have fun. Okay, let's go ahead and move on into stuff that I actually wrote down. First thing, let's talk about the new Overwatch Le Sserafim collaboration. The biggest thing was that there was a music video kind of deal where they had the new pop man Le Sserafim perform with members of Overwatch. You have Brig, Sombra, Tracer, D.Va, and who was the last one? Support. Why am I blanking out? I said Brig already.
It was Kiriko.
Kiriko, yeah. So that's the five that they have in there. They had their music video that went along with it. And I saw the music video and the original piece too. I thought that they were gonna do what League of Legends does, where they just let the performers perform the song and then all the animation is done in game, so that each one of their characters is like, each one of the characters is essentially like a personification of a member from the band or from the group itself. They have five members, so five members, five Overwatch, five on five, it makes sense. The other thing that they added were skins and the dance to go into the game itself. So, you can get the Le Sserafim skins that they had in the original music video in game. If you guys are streaming right now, be careful. When you do open the menu, it does play Perfect Night. So, some Overwatch streamers are like, we have to like mute the game before we go and stream, because you might get copyright striked, however you want to call it. So yeah, other than that, I think that the concept and the idea was kind of cool, where it cut between the two. It really does show off more of what Le Sserafim is as a group, rather than just having them being the persona of what they are in Overwatch 2. This is just a me thing. I feel like you could do two of them. You can do, this is something that League doesn't do. But there should be one version, which is just the Overwatch characters. You're telling a music video story via the Overwatch universe, and like the same thing that Riot does with their music videos, right? And then on the second one, showcase the showcase the actual group and give them some of the special effects that you have in the game as well to really complement like the tie-in between the two. So one is more of like a choreography version and the other one is the music video version. The reason why that would work is, one, it gives promotion to the actual like artists to really show off. Like, obviously, like if the dance is good and the song is good, people will perform the dance, gets trending, keeps it going.
Viral.
Do the same thing in game where you use the main chorus dance part as an emote, then you get even more people like on board. So I do think that that is a play that like Overwatch can look forward to in the future if they want to go ahead and do something like that. But overall, this is a nice step in the right direction, in my opinion. I think that like it may, yes, it looks like it's like we have to compete with Riot to bring people back to Overwatch kind of deal. But I do think that if you do it in a more unique way than just saying like, okay, like one music video kind of intercutting, it kind of takes you out of the moment of enjoying the cinematic that would have been the music video. And yeah, like just this random intercut of like, here's the original artist.
Yeah, like you don't have that sense of immersion, I think is what I'm getting from it.
Exactly. I feel like that should be a way to really dive in there. So that's what I think. I think it's a good step. If you guys are still if you guys are playing Overwatch, you could go ahead and get all of this stuff in game. It looks really nice, but your boy has been long retired. They did, however, pull me out of retirement this weekend. I forgot to mention this at the top of the broadcast, but I went to my old college. I went back to the Academy of Art because they were having an Overwatch tournament this weekend. Oh. And they were like, hey, like I just dropped in because like I'm old and I wanted to see how the esports production class is handling it. Mm-hmm. Because the last time that they ran it was when I was not when I was a student, but I was still more like active in the community. So it was me just seeing like, okay, how is the studio running? Is everything all good? How are the new students? Are they like having fun with the cast and commentary? Is there things that I need to drop in and like say hi or like give them tips about? And I was like, okay, they ran the tournament as is. And then in typical like college fashion, the tournament quote unquote starts at X time, right? So like, let's say tournament starts at 1, right? Tech difficulties and getting people in chairs is always the hardest part. So you know, games don't start till 2:30, and then we finally get like a couple games going, a couple games on broadcast, and there's a couple broadcasting hiccups. That's just how it is. And so on and so forth. But overall, I think the event went well. Long story short, I was also pulled in because some of the students didn't show up to play on their teams. So your boy was pulled out of retirement and had to play against his old teammates on both teams. And I won. So I guess I get bragging rights on that end, but yeah, it's hard to, I guess the moral of the story is there needs to be more tank players that are equally as aggressive as me. there are some people who are just like, okay, yeah, we'll do things here and there. And like, you start seeing a couple people like pushing the same tempo as me. But then like when I was playing against like one of my friends who I know he plays tank, I know the style that he plays, I'm like, I'm going in your back line. You could hop on my back line. I'll hop on your back line. We'll see who's Zen and Ana die first. We're just playing speed run at this game. But yeah, it was good. Good coordination. I didn't know anybody on my team. I just did classic shot calling, and yeah, it was pretty good. I know that ArtU is doing more tournaments later down the line, and they have invited me back to possibly cast those. So I'll give you guys a heads up if I do hop into one of those games. We'll see if Kogashi also wants to take a shot at something like that. So, overall, you got to bring Kogashi. He's just got to see what's up. But yeah, overall, in terms of the new Overwatch stuff, the Le Seraphim collab is out. If you guys want to check it out, go ahead. Overwatch, still kind of fun. I just got to bring my friends along for the ride.
That's the hardest part, is getting the team.
Yeah. Cool. Let's move on into the weeb stuff, switching from gamer hat to weeb hat. Let's start with Kinokuniya, which is one of the bigger book retailers for usually like Japanese media in general. They do have a new membership card design out. They don't do this that often, but every once in a while they will drop a cool design for us. The biggest one that they did most recently was when Suzume came out in the States, which is that is the latest Makoto Shinkai film, same guy who made Your Name and Weathering With You. The poster for the card, or the poster for that movie, turned into a Kinokuniya membership card that you can get. So that was really cool if you guys wanted to go ahead and get something like that. But the newest one that they just unveiled earlier today was a collaboration with Hirohiko Araki, who is the guy who makes JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. It is a picture of Dio and Jotaro from Part 3 facing off against each other on the card. It looks really cool. As a big JoJo's nerd, I like this kind of art, and I think that on a Kinokuniya card, I'm getting it. If you have a membership already, it only costs you $5 to switch from your old card to the new card. So if you just are looking to collect like these kind of cool like little poster cards, go ahead and do it. That's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to get this new one. I'm going to use it until there's a new one, and then I'm going to rotate it out. But that is what we have for that. If you guys are looking to possibly get an annual fee for it, it costs $25 a year, and you get 10% off of any purchase that you do in a Kinokuniya, either online or in store. So yeah, it's a cool little card. If you guys like JoJo's, you could get a JoJo's card. I know that I'm going to pick it up. It's just a matter of me getting out there and finding the time to do it. Last thing to go ahead and wrap up today. Let's talk about the manga releases. There's only two of them that came out this week that we really have to touch on. First one is Dress Up Darling 10, and then the other one is the Full Metal Alchemist 20th anniversary book. 20th anniversary book, by the way, is hardcover. It has been 20 years. It didn't come to the States for a while, so you don't really have to worry about that.
Yeah, that tends to happen with like imported culture from other places.
Yeah. But the 20th anniversary book is hardcover. So if you guys are looking to match it with the Full Metal editions, they will flush with them. So it looks really, really nice. As for next week, things to look out for. The biggest one is One Piece 104. Volume 104 is out for One Piece. That comes out next week. Yeah. Next week, One Piece 104. Next, Shangri-La Frontier 8 does have an anime out right now. If you still want to keep going on the manga, you can get it there. And last but not least is Blue Box 7. It is Shonen Jump's latest romantic comedy with a little bit of a sports element hopped in there as well. So make sure to go ahead and pick those up. I will be doing a TikTok soon about all of the releases in November. So if you guys do want to check out all of my stupid manga content, it is Kana Manga on TikTok. KanaManga. Lots of A's. But that's how you do it.
Okay, so that I you know what, I felt like this episode went way longer than I thought it would, which is not bad because we had a lot of good conversation. But like, I'm looking through like the news this week, and I'm like, I feel like I was scraping to get some stuff to talk about because, like, I don't know. Generally, I feel like this time of year is like hit or miss with entertainment news. It's either there's so much coming out, and it's like we're stuffing each episode and just. Mm-hmm. Choking on pop culture, or it's like this year where there's like nothing around this like November, and we have to wait till like maybe nothing even really happens in December. There's not much besides like Christmas movies or anything that happens. Spring is when things like start to come alive.
I totally agree as well. For the manga community, I think that the only couple days that we really have to worry about is this upcoming November 21st, which has quite a few books, and the 28th. And then like closer to the actual holiday season is a big drop. But as long as like, I'll give you guys heads up of like where you should look to go and get certain books. Especially heading closer to the holiday season. It will definitely help you out with your wallet.
Okay, so as we wrap up this episode, Kevin, what's your advice for enjoying the fall season now that we're in November?
Pumpkin spice is overrated. Go get anything that's apple cider. That is going
Ooh.
to be the new meme.
Ooh.
I had a hot apple cider earlier today. It's very good. If you see something in a store, go and pick it up. That's it. Have fun, treat yourself just as you would treat other people during the holiday season. Treat yourself as well.
All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. Hope you have a great week. Hope you had a great week. And enjoy some apple cider. Thanks, and we will catch you next week. Adios.
Next week, we bring you the latest news and stories from around the internet.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to us and rate us 5 stars on all your favorite podcast platforms. You can also follow us on all social media at TwigPod, that's TwigPod, and feel free to send us any questions, comments, or any suggestions of topics you'd like us to cover. If you'd like to advertise with our show, please contact our network at Bleav.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week in Geek.